everybody. Welcome to the 13 o'clock podcast. This is episode 9. And we did a thing about a serial killer last week, the original Night Stalker. And after we did that, I kind of got interested in other sort of lesser known serial killer cases. But I thought I'd take it back to the Victorian era. And this topic actually got the idea from a really cool British miniseries. It's on Netflix if you want to watch it. It's called Murder Maps. And it's kind of a cool show where they talk about, it's from the Victorian era to, I believe, World War II was the last one. And they kind of talk about the most spectacular crimes that happened in London around those time periods. And they mentioned Jack the Ripper, but, you know, since so much is known about that, they kind of went off in different directions and talked about lesser known ones. And one of the cases they talked about is actually one of the guys I'm going to talk about today. And they mentioned the other guy I'm going to talk about today. And I wanted to put these two guys together because they had a lot of weird similarities. They're both convicted serial killers. Both were poisoners. They, you know, they used poison for the murders that they were finally convicted for. And incidentally, they were both considered suspects in the Jack the Ripper case.
So there's a possibility that one of these two guys could be Jack.
Could have been Jack the Ripper, sure.
Were they believed to be, they were believed to be Jack the, or they were believed to possibly be Jack the Ripper back in those days too, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Gotcha. One is more likely than the other.
Okay.
But, you know, and there were obviously a lot of suspects. I think at the time, 80 people were detained.
All right.
But the first guy I want to talk about, this is going to be the case of George Chapman. Now, interestingly, George Chapman was the man that Inspector Frederick Aberline, who was the main Jack the Ripper investigator. And if you saw the movie From Hell, that was the character that Johnny Depp played. Frederick Aberline actually thought that George Chapman was the most likely suspect. And even though there are some other suspects that are kind of likely too, I mean, this guy, just by his movements alone, it kind of makes you really suspicious.
Okay.
This guy, he was actually Polish, born in Poland, and George Chapman was not his real name. That was an alias. He went by several of them. His birth name was Severin Kozlowski. I hope I said that right. I'm sorry, Polish people. And he, in the end, he was convicted of killing 3 women, although they think there might have been more. Now, he was actually a surgeon's assistant. He trained under a surgeon when he was a kid in Poland. And, you know, surgeon's assistant nurse back then would have just been, you know, sticking leeches on people and shit like that. But, you know, since some people at the time thought, oh, Jack the Ripper must have had some medical knowledge, blah-de-blah. So, you know, that ticks that box there. Now, he moved to London, they think, in 1887 or 1888. Now, if you know anything about the Jack the Ripper case, you know that the Ripper murders took place in 1888. And George Chapman specifically not just moved to London, he moved to Whitechapel.
Where they happened. Right.
Now, he didn't live super close to where the, you know, the crime scenes, but he did live in that area. Now, he had a wife back in Poland, but evidently he said, fuck her, and he left her back in Poland because when he got in London, he married another Polish girl who was there, named Lucy Badewski.
I think bigamy was kind of common back then. There was no way to really check.
Yeah, there was no way to really check, especially country to country.
Yeah.
So he probably figured, hey, why not? You know,
yeah, marry another one.
Here's another one. Now, it should be noted that his wife, Lucy, was, other than his original Polish wife, his wife, Lucy, was the only woman he was involved with that he didn't kill, allegedly. So I think she was all right. But he had 2 kids with her also. And his original wife found out, and she got pretty pissed, obviously.
The one back in Poland.
Found out about it. I don't know if she did anything about it. Like, I don't know if she, like, you know, marched into London going, yo, motherfucker, or anything like that. But, you know. So even though he had a wife in London, he started taking up with other women. He had about 4 mistresses.
What did he do?
But he would introduce them as his wife. But he worked as a surgeon's assistant, barber of thing.
All right.
Yeah. So he took up with these women. He said they were his wives. Some sources call them his common law wives, whatever. Okay. Three of these women mysteriously ended up dead. Now, no one noticed anything. Like, they didn't suspect anything at first. His first two victims were named Mary Spink, was the first one. And, oh my goodness.
Oh, wow, sorry.
Kazoon tight.
Yeah, got me.
And Bessie Taylor was the second one. And they died from quote-unquote illnesses, so no one thought anything about it. You know, oh, they got sick, they died. Right. However, then he took a mistress named Maud Marsh. And same thing happened with her. She was very young, very pretty girl. I believe he was running a pub and she worked there. Okay. She was a lot younger than him. And her mother lived there as well. She came down with some mystery illness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he seemed very, you know, doting on her. And he was all upset and calling mm-hmm. doctors and trying to figure out what was the matter. I don't have any idea what could be wrong with her. Took her to the hospital, whole 9 yards. They had no idea what was the matter with her. And so she just got sicker and sicker. And her mother called in another doctor.
Yeah, and I don't think he wanted her to call in another doctor.
Yeah, he's like, my doctor's fine. Right, you know, the other doctor's going to say the same thing that my doctor said. You know, it's fine. But the mother was like, you know, I want her to get better, so she called in her own doctor.
Second opinion.
To get a second opinion, which, you know, reasonable enough.
Right.
Now, this other doctor came in, and at first he wasn't quite sure what was wrong either. He conferred with the first doctor, and they're like, maybe somebody could be poisoning her.
Yeah.
Because the symptoms were kind of similar to arsenic poisoning. Now, Maud Marsh did end up dying. Mm-hmm. And because of the mother's suspicions, because of the doctor's suspicions, George Chapman was arrested. And they actually found out about the other two women and had them exhumed.
Yeah, they found out all the dead women in his past.
Yeah. So, you know, his other two mistresses.
And they did an autopsy, too.
They did.
Yeah.
And they found out that these three women had indeed been poisoned. Mm-hmm. The poison he used was, it was actually over the counter. You could buy it at a pharmacy. It was called tartar emetic. Mm-hmm. And it has a metallic element in it called antimony, which is very poisonous in high doses. But like I said, you could buy it.
Yeah.
It was for colds and flus and things like that. And it turned out that they found out that George Chapman had bought a very large supply of tartar emetic from a chemist in Sussex. And he had been administering this to the women over a long period of time. So it looked like a long illness. And then finally they died. And antimony poisoning is very, very similar to arsenic poisoning. Very painful, very, you know, very lingering
death.
Death, yeah. Very unpleasant. And so it turned out, because of the mother's suspicions, because of the doctor's suspicions, George Chapman was arrested after they did the autopsies and found the poison. And he ended up, now, I guess, and I'm not sure, like, what the law, why the law was like this. Mm-hmm. But apparently, he could only be tried for the one murder. Right. I don't know if it was because the other two women were too degraded, like, for it to stick, or
I think Victorian-era law was pretty convoluted.
Well, and because I think the law in the UK at the time, I mean, if you killed somebody, they pretty much just hung your ass. They didn't fuck around. So it's just like, well, one murder's as good as 20. It's like, we're going to hang you anyway. So he actually only ended up being convicted for the death of Maud Marsh.
Well, that's all they needed.
That's all they needed. Right. Because like I said, you know, so they hanged him at Wandsworth Prison in 1903. Now, the weirdest thing about this guy is that he didn't really have a particular motive.
No motive.
The only time he got any financial gain, I mean, you know, a lot of times these poisonings, it's for financial gain, usually. Mm-hmm. The only financial gain he got that they know of was one of the women left him 500 pounds.
That's nothing.
Which was a lot of money at the time, but not a fortune by any means.
Probably not worth committing murder. He was a businessman. Right. I mean, he had a pub.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he wasn't broke. And I mean, you know, he was a skilled person. And so it would seem like the other two women, he didn't get anything out of it.
Could it have been Munchausen by proxy?
See, that's what I'm thinking. Because maybe he got off on caring for these sick women and the attention that it afforded him from people going, oh, poor guy. And people thought it was his wives, but they were actually his mistresses. But
yeah, because the doctors said that he did seem genuinely concerned.
Yeah.
Right.
And so he seemed very grief stricken when they died.
I'm thinking it must have been Munchausen by proxy.
It might have been. Because initially I would have thought maybe he was just a sadist. Maybe he enjoyed watching women suffer.
However, like
you said, all of the witnesses said he seemed genuinely sad and when they died, and he was upset and he cared for them. And
in case someone in the audience doesn't know, maybe you should explain what Munchausen by proxy is. Are we taking it for granted that people know what that is?
Yeah. I mean, Munchausen by proxy is basically when someone, and in a lot of cases it's mothers or, you know, parents with their children, they will deliberately make their children or make someone sick. Because they get attention and sympathy.
Over taking care of them.
About taking care of them. It's, you know, it's almost kind of like a martyr complex. Like, oh, look at all of the trials I have to go through.
Although, in Munchausen by proxy, they're not actually trying to kill the kid.
No. But they want to keep the child ill.
Right.
So they keep getting sympathy. They keep getting...
And in this case, it looked like he was in a way trying to kill her. Although, he could have killed her a lot quicker, probably.
That's what I mean, because it seemed like...
Right.
I mean, like I said, it's very poisonous in high doses, but he would just give her like a little bit at a time.
Now, why did the inspector have him as a Ripper suspect?
Because what happened, one, serial killer.
Okay.
Two, an interesting thing was that the Ripper murders stopped when George Chapman... went to the United States. Now, right around the time George Chapman arrived in the United States, in New York City specifically, there was a murder of a prostitute named Carrie Brown in New York City. Very, very similar to the Ripper murders. She was mutilated, you know, middle-aged prostitute.
Ripper style.
Very Ripper style. Right. And certainly at the time, the newspapers in New York... Jack the Ripper arrives on U.S. shores.
Okay.
Right, and it was a big deal. It was in all the media at the time because it was so similar. So they're not entirely sure because, like I said, George Chapman had a number of aliases.
Right.
So they're not sure exactly. They knew he was in the U.S., but they don't know if he arrived before or after the Carrie Brown murder. But it was right around the time of that happening.
So in general, the timeline, the investigation showed that wherever he was, Ripper murders happened. And wherever he was not, they ceased.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because they did stop because he left.
Right.
You know, he left for the United States and the Ripper murders stopped.
So that could support the idea that maybe he had two separate issues. He may have had Munchausen by proxy on one hand. And then he had another gig as the Ripper.
Yeah.
Killing two different kinds of women. For two different purposes.
Right.
And maybe two different forms of emotional gratification.
Because honestly, it seems to me like the only argument against him being the Ripper... I mean, and like I said, there are other likely suspects as well. I'm not saying that he was the guy. But the only arguments against it are like, well, serial killers tend to stick to one modus operandi. So they don't usually poison their acquaintances and then go out and hack up prostitutes. However, it has happened. It's not impossible. You know, usually serial killers will stick to one method, but not always. So it seems, and like I said, they're not real sure if he was responsible for the Carrie Brown because they're not entirely sure when he got to New York, although it was around that time.
But then that gets back to my hypothesis as he was the Ripper.
Yeah.
He was a serial killer, and he also happened to have Munchausen by proxy. He wasn't really trying to kill those women. He was just trying to get fame or whatever, attention.
Yeah.
For taking care of them. Maybe in, almost in a form of maybe like atonement.
Yeah.
I'm a caring guy.
that's a good hypothesis.
I'm trying to save women.
And that's then a good hypothesis.
And while nobody's watching, he's out there killing them.
Yeah. Almost like a weird like Jekyll and Hyde.
Like a Jekyll and Hyde type of deal. But, you know, a killer either way.
Right.
He's killing them. Killed through both
It
means.
Should be noted, too, that...
maybe his atonement. He's killing strangers, so he's sacrificing his own wife and the people that he loved to atone for random murders.
Right.
Who knows? Something weird like that.
That's actually kind of a good... I never thought of it that way, but that's actually...
Kind of like how Albert Fish would stick needles in himself.
Yeah.
To atone for the stuff that he had done.
Yeah. Look up Albert Fish, you guys. That's some sick shit.
Ooh.
But, we might do a show on him one day, too. Right. That's a sick motherfucker. It should also be noted that George Chapman's wife, the second one, the second one, Polish one in London, she told Inspector Aberline that her husband would often go out at night and she didn't know where he was.
Right.
And she also said... that I'm not sure if this is the same. Actually, his original wife said that he was a wife beater. And it was known that all of the other women that were his mistresses, they had also complained that he had beat them up. So he was clearly a violent,
weird,
misogynistic type of guy.
Right.
His original wife even claimed that he had tried to strangle her and that he had a knife under the pillow and that he said he was going to behead her. And she said he even told her where he was going to bury her body, what story he was going to tell, like, you know, to tell people where she went and stuff like that. So, not a good guy.
No.
Not a good guy. No matter how you you slice it.
Freak.
Freak. Yeah. Definitely. And like I said, you know, because they said, oh, it's rare for a serial killer to change his method, blah, blah, blah. There's also some... people wonder whether he spoke good enough English at the time, you know, that he could have done it. But also, again, it should be noted, too, that his description matched the description somebody saw Mary Jane Kelly, who was the fifth of the canonical five Jack the Ripper victims. There were actually 11 murders of women that could have been Jack the Ripper, but those five are the ones that they know were the same guy. She was the fifth one, Mary Jane Kelly, and someone saw her with a man shortly before her murder, and George Chapman's description fit his very closely.
Yeah, I think it was the description of the clothes and stuff. The hat, yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah, I think they said he looked swarthy and had a mustache or something like that.
Right.
And so, you know, so he was someone who looked like him was seen with one of the victims. So, could have been him. He, like I said, Aberline certainly thought it was him. But, you know, we'll probably never know.
They'll never know who the Ripper
was. Never know.
Case is too old.
so, yeah. But he was hanged for the three poisonings. And that was the end of that guy. Now, I guess I'm going to close this. Now, the second guy I want to talk about. Actually, let me take a break first. And then we'll get into the second guy who... was kind of similar in a lot of ways, but also kind of a weirdo and kind of a dumbass, I want to say. Like, he got caught out of his own dumbassery, really. But okay, so we're going to take our first break right now, and we'll be right back in just a few minutes. I would like to take a second and thank Subculture Corsets and Clothing for sponsoring Project iRadio and my show. While listening to my podcast, please take a second and visit their website at www.subculturecorsets.com. They carry a wide selection of corsets, rockabilly, gothic, steampunk, and pinup clothing, shoes, and accessories. Again, their website is subculturecorsets.com, or if you're in the Jacksonville, Florida area, stop by their store in the Avenues Mall. And if you like to save money, use the discount code 13O'Clock when checking out and save 10% off your entire order. By the way, if you're a curvy girl, Subculture did not forget about you. They carry size 4 to 4X, and guys, they have men's clothing and shoes as well. So go shop at subculturecorsets.com now and use the discount code 13O'Clock for a 10% discount. Okay, talking about serial killers, poisoners, Jack the Ripper suspects.
Okay.
And next we will consider the case of Dr. Thomas Neal Cream.
Thomas Cream.
I know, which like sounds
did he
like
make that name up?
I don't think he did, actually.
That's like a porn name.
I was going to say, it sounds like a porn name. Thomas Nail Cream. It's okay, all these people are dead. They can't kill us now. Yeah. But so we can make fun of them if we want to. They all, it's funny, because, you know, if you watch the YouTube video, I'll have, like, pictures of these dudes, but they all look like that, too, with those big, giant, epic mustaches and fucking,
guys, they had a thing for facial hair back then.
They did. It was pretty epic, though, I gotta say. Now, Dr. Cream, he's also been considered by some to have been the Ripper, although there are some things against it. But he was also a poisoner. George Chapman was actually known as the Burrow Poisoner, and Thomas Neal Cream is known as the Lambeth Poisoner, also a serial killer.
I don't think I've ever heard of this guy.
Yeah.
Have I heard of this guy? I don't think so, huh?
Yeah. See, I think when we watched Murder Maps, they talked about the George Chapman case in quite a bit, and they mentioned this guy.
Oh, but not in detail.
In similarity, but not in detail.
Gotcha.
But he is on the suspect list.
Okay.
Although it probably wasn't him, but, you know, you never know. He was actually Scottish. He was from Glasgow. Although when he was 4 years old, his family moved to Canada. And so he grew up in Canada, and he was actually a doctor. He went to medical school. Interestingly, his thesis in medical school was about chloroform, which I'm sure would come in handy much later. Yeah. Now, the reason why that he is, and this is pretty much the only reason he's considered, other than being a serial killer, the only reason that he is considered a Jack the Ripper suspect is that when he was hanged, the hangman claimed that before he died, his last words were, "I am Jack the..."
Yeah, I've heard that story.
And then he died. Now, it should be noted that no one else heard him say that.
Right.
And, you know, it would have been like big bragging rights for that hangman to go, "I hang Jack the Ripper, motherfucker."
Right.
You know what I mean? So you have to take that story with a grain of salt.
Another thing that could have happened is that the guy was getting ready to die, and in desperation, he might have tried that ploy to hold up the execution.
Oh, yeah. That's
to live for a little bit.
It's like,
longer.
wait a minute.
Hold on. You're Jack the Ripper? Yeah, I'm Jack the Ripper.
I'll tell you the whole story.
Yeah.
You just take this noose off.
Could have been that.
But so this guy, like I said, this guy, similar, you know, similar kind of method of killing as George Chapman, but he seemed like a sadist, but he also seemed like he was trying to get financial gain out of it, although he went about it in the stupidest fucking way possible, I have to say, and it ended up getting him caught. But he kind of went all over. Like I said, he went to Canada, then he went to Scotland, and then he went to, he actually married his first wife, Flora. A year later, she got pregnant. He gave her an abortion.
Wow.
Well, he's a doctor.
Okay. Guess you could do it.
Although I don't think he was very good at doing abortions. Right. I'll get into that a little bit later. But then she later died of quote unquote consumption. Okay. No one thought anything of it at the time. But in light of later events, you know, they went back and were like, yeah, he probably offed her too. But he went to London for his postgraduate, went back to Canada. And then when he was in Canada, he had a little office there, a little doctor's office. And a woman named Kate Gardner, he was supposedly having an affair with her and had apparently, he had apparently knocked her up. Mm-hmm. She was found dead in the alley behind his office, still pregnant. She had been poisoned with chloroform. Now, Cream said, I can't believe that's that dude's name. Do we have to call him that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dr. Cream.
That's like Dr. Moist. That's so nasty.
That's ridiculous.
It's such a gross word.
That's ridiculous.
It's such a gross word. But, so, this is, okay, now this is the kind of shit that kept getting this dude into trouble. Here's what he would do. He would kill a woman, usually by poisoning her. Then he would write a letter to some prominent person and say, "You killed this woman, and I'm going to tell the police unless you give me X amount of money."
What?
Yeah, that's
what
I mean.
How would that
work? That's what I mean. How would this work?
How would this supposed to
work? I guess he was supposed to, I guess he thought he could frighten people.
He's trying to frame people.
Yeah, he was trying to frighten people into giving him money. Because he's like, well, even if you don't get convicted, you know, you'll have to go to the police and they'll think you're a murderer and blah, 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 and it'll ruin your reputation or whatever. I don't know what the dude was thinking. Mm-hmm. He was kind of an idiot. But anyway.
Weird.
So they found this dead woman in Canada behind, you know, pregnant chloroform. And he was trying to...
Yeah, you didn't say how he killed him. How was he killing him?
Chloroform.
Oh, just chloroform him to death?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
They OD'd her.
He OD'd, yeah. Poisoned him with that. So he claimed that another local businessman had made her pregnant and killed her. What? No one fell for it.
Right.
Everyone said, no, it was you. So he took off to the U.S. As you would.
Dummy.
Because he thought, yeah. But as you'll see, he did not learn from that.
No? Okay.
He did not learn.
Okay.
Next, he turns up in Chicago. And he opens up a little office in the red light district.
Okay.
Giving illegal abortions to prostitutes.
Right.
Which, like, you know.
Like you do.
Needed service, perhaps, even though it was illegal at the time. But like I said, he either was not very good at abortions, or he was just super poison happy.
Right.
Because what ended up having, he was first investigated in 1880, and this woman was Marianne Faulkner, and he had supposedly given her abortion and she died, but there wasn't enough evidence, so he skated on that one. Another one of his patients died after being treated by him. And in that case, he tried to blackmail the pharmacist who gave her a prescription. Like, he wrote him a letter and said, you killed this with your poison that you sent her.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the pharmacist is like, whatever, fuck you, dude. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. And then, a year later... there's another woman named Alice Montgomery. She died of actually strychnine poisoning, not chloroform. And she had had an abortion also. And it was only a block from his office. So they're not entirely sure. They know she was murdered. They don't know if it was him. But he was right there. And, you know, he was an abortionist. He was poisoning people, allegedly. So they thought that was him. But it was never pinned on him.
What is the actual motive? Is there a motive to this?
That's what I mean. I'm not really sure. It's like, he tried extortion and blackmail.
Right.
I don't know if it ever actually worked,
though.
Was
there a sexual motive?
I don't think so. I mean, he did, some of the women he was having an affair with.
There's not enough evidence to support that.
It just kind of seemed like prostitutes would come into his office going, hey, I need an abortion.
Yeah.
And then he'd be like, here's an abortion. Oh, and hi, I'll poison you too. How about that?
Wow.
And then, but like I said, but then he would write a letter to some prominent person and go, hey, you killed this girl, or you knocked this girl up and killed her.
So he gave me money, or I'll call an extortion scheme.
Yeah. But like I said, I don't think it ever worked.
Oh, ridiculous.
I don't think it ever worked. Now, so he had apparently killed all these women up to this point and had gotten away with it. However, people got more suspicious when a man turned up dead, which should tell you something right there. So this was in Illinois, actually. He was still in Chicago at this point. It was in 1881. A man named Daniel Stott. And he turned up dead after he had gotten a prescription from Dr. Cream, Dr. Moist. After he had gotten a prescription because Daniel Stott had epilepsy. So Dr. Cream's like, well, I can help you with that. Here's a prescription. Yeah. And then he died.
He killed
him. All right. Now, at first... the death was attributed to natural causes. He was an epileptic. He was in bad health.
Right.
No one thought anything about it. Until Dr. Cream, retardedly, wrote a letter to the coroner and said that the pharmacist was responsible for Daniel Stott's death and saying, give me money or I'm going to tell that to the cops. Right? So...
this is weird.
I know. That's what I mean. It's like I said, this is like the dumbest. Like, why do you think...
the dumbest MO ever.
Yeah. It's so dumb.
He just... you know what's funny is that during this time, there was a lot of these fake doctors, like J.J. Holmes. And
yeah. H.H. Holmes.
H.H. Holmes. Is that his name?
Yeah, he was not... now, this guy was actually a real doctor, supposedly. Real, yeah.
Right.
He had all the paperwork and shit, and he apparently did go to colleges and whatnot.
He just sounds more like a pathological liar, scam artist who was
he's just like a fraudster,
sociopath,
who was into murdering people.
Well, he probably considered it like euthanasia, you know what I mean? Where, oh, yeah, your life is unworthy of living anyway, so, you know, here, I'm going to put you out of your misery.
And maybe make a buck off
you. Yeah, try to make a buck off you.
Right.
Yeah, psycho.
But so, here's the dumb thing is that had he not written a letter to the coroner saying, the pharmacist did it, no one would have thought that the Daniel Stott murder was a murder.
He fingered it himself.
That's what I mean.
All right.
So it's almost like he wanted to get caught.
Yeah, just an idiot.
Okay, so he got arrested, and it turned out that he was fucking Daniel Stott's wife.
What?
And that Daniel Stott's wife had asked him to poison her husband.
Whoa.
But then she turned state's evidence and ratted him out.
Wow.
Ratted Cream out, right?
Jeez.
And so I don't know if he thought, I don't know if she had money and you thought, oh, we'll bump off the husband and then you and me will share his life insurance. I don't know. I don't know if that's what he thought.
Sounds like a, could this be more of a case of a quack doctor who's a sociopath trying to make a buck and then in the end gets hooked up with a bad woman who wants to kill her husband?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
That's because he doesn't really sound like a typical serial killer with a sexual motive.
Right.
And a drive.
Although, I have to say, this is only, you know, at this point, this more shit happened.
Oh, later. This is only part of it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But,
I don't know this case. This
yeah.
is first, you know, first time I've really heard about it.
So, yeah. So, she narked on him. Now, he got sent to, now, so she got off.
Okay.
So, he got a murder conviction. And this was at Joliet Prison in Chicago. He was sentenced to life. However, he served about 10 years. And then his brother made a quote-unquote plea for leniency, i.e. greased some palms.
Sure.
And got Dr. Creamy let out.
Oh, man. You could do that? You could get a man out of a life sentence with a bribe back then? Wow.
Yeah. For murder.
Wow.
Of all things. Okay, so he gets out of Joliet Prison.
Mm-hmm.
Happy as a clam.
Okay.
Then he goes to England.
Okay.
London specifically. Now, he did not actually live in Whitechapel, and it is thought that he did not arrive in London until 1891, which was a couple of years after the Ripper murders. Now, some people have said that, oh, he got out of prison earlier than they thought. You know, so he could have been there at the time. Or a little more far-fetched, a couple of writers have said, oh, well, a look-alike served prison in his place or something. I don't know if I really buy that. So, you know, there's a possibility he could have been alive.
What is it? The records from the time are a little spotty, so they don't really know?
Okay. So they're not quite sure.
All right.
But they think he was in prison in Chicago when the murders were going on in London, but they're not entirely certain. They think that he got to... He arrived in Liverpool in 1891. Now, his father had died and left him a bunch of money, and that's what he used to move to London. It must not have been a lot of money, because he moved to Lambeth, which is kind of a shithole at the time.
Right.
You know, I don't know if it was as bad as Whitechapel, but, you know, same kind of thing. And as soon as he arrived on British shores, like I said, he learned nothing. So as soon as he got there, 19-year-old prostitute, Nellie Donworth... And he's like, hey, he's in a pub. Want a drink? Sure. Next day, she kills her for dead from strychnine poisoning.
Damn.
Okay? And he didn't get anything out of that. I don't think. Oh, well, actually, he did try to get something out of this. Same kind of way he did the other. He kills a prostitute in a bar, just giving her a drink with strychnine in it. She dies. And then when they're doing the investigation about her death... He did the same thing. He wrote a letter to the coroner and said, I know who the murderer is, and I'll tell you for £300,000.
What?
Right?
Damn.
And he wrote a letter to a guy named W.F.D. Smith, who actually, if you're from the UK, you'll know W.H. Smith, the bookstore. Okay, that was one of the original owners. That's a big book chain over there, kind of like Barnes & Noble over here. And accused him of the murder and said, give me money or I'm telling the cops.
Oh, man, what a scammer.
Right? Okay. So then it seemed like he kind of got away with that one. He kind of got away with
that. Why, they couldn't find out who sent
the letter?
Yeah,
I guess they couldn't really find out anything about it. So they were just like, whatever.
All right.
And then he met with a 27-year-old prostitute named Matilda Clover. And he did the same thing to her. He just poisoned her. Yeah, she died the next day. Now, this death was not initially thought a murder because she was an alcoholic and she was in bad health. They thought she just keeled over dead because her liver gave out or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it would have stayed that way, again, mm-hmm. if this dumbass had not written a letter to another doctor in town and said, I know you killed her. Give me money.
So he's done
or
this.
Or I'm ratting. Yeah, and he just keeps doing it. And as far as I know, no one gives him any money for yeah. shit. And yet
he's done this at least 5-6 times.
And yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said.
And this MO does not work. But
no. And like I said, the murder that he was convicted of in Chicago, the murder of Daniel Stott, would have been ruled a natural death if he right. had not done that and someone hadn't gotten suspicious. And as you'll see, the murders that he did in England, the same shit happened. He right. would have skated.
Man.
If he hadn't done this kind of crap. Actually, let's take another
break. But he wouldn't have killed the woman had he thought, or had he, well, what's a good way to put it? He wouldn't have killed the woman had he thought that, or had he not thought that he would have made money.
Right. Way to put it. I get, yeah.
So he's dumb enough to think that he's going to make money.
Yeah.
That's why he killed her.
Dude's an idiot.
He didn't learn.
All right. I'm going to do a second break real quick right now, and then we'll come back and yeah. finish this case up, because this is like funny as hell. All right. Yeah. So we'll be back in just a minute.
There are terrors, real and imaginary, and I write about them all. Paranormal nonfiction, horror fiction, the Rochdale House Poltergeist, the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist, the Associated Hopeful Monsters, Red Menace, the Five Poisons, Bellwether. Go to www.jennyashford.com or search Amazon for the Jenny Ashford author page.
Okay. So like I said, initially, prostitute Matilda Clover, they thought she had died from her alcoholism until Cream wrote a letter to a doctor, Dr. Broadbent, who was actually a pretty well-known doctor in the area, said, you killed her, give me money or I'll tell the cops. And Dr. Broadbent, being no idiot, sent the letter to Scotland Yard.
Yeah, right. Gotcha.
As she would. He's yeah. like, what the fuck is this about?
Yeah.
Now, while that was all going on, it was just like a few days later, and this one was kind of odd because this one seemed like one where he didn't try to benefit off it. Cream's toddling around, runs into two prostitutes, because he wanted two for the price of one, I guess. He wanted a yeah. challenge this time. Alice Marsh and Emma Shrivel, they were 21 and 18 years old, was able to weasel his way into their flat.
Okay.
And he had some bottles of Guinness. Okay. Hey, here you go. Drink some Guinness. They did. He left, and then they both died of strychnine poisoning.
Damn.
Several hours later.
Wow.
And I don't think that he attempted to get anything out of that.
Just
I guess
did it for fun.
He just did that one for shits and giggles, wow, I guess. Weird. Fucking freak
I thought strychnine took a long time to kill you. You'd think
it does.
You'd think they would have run for help.
Yeah.
But maybe the dosage was real high.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Maybe they couldn't.
Yeah.
You know.
Weird.
Yeah, that's horrible.
No necrophilia involved, as far as they know.
Yeah, not that it was ever reported.
Huh.
Unless
the Victorians hadn't thought of that.
Oh, I'm sure they
thought of that. Maybe they did think of that, yeah.
In a lot of ways, like, if you read some yeah. of the, they loved all that sordid shit back then. I'm sure if yeah. somebody was fucking corpses, they'd have been all about that. God. They'd have drawn pictures of it and put it in the paper and everything.
Right.
Because, you know, like, even during the Ripper murders, they, like, had those horrible
right.
drawings of, like, look at all the intestines and
yeah.
all this kind of shit. They were into that. So he kills all these women and probably would have just kept doing it and probably would have got away with it, except for sending all these dumbass letters, right?
Attempting to profit off of something.
Attempting to profit off of it.
Yeah.
Another thing he did, too, while he was still free, like
in
before...
In the face of constant failure.
He yeah, like I said, I don't think anybody... I mean, right. the records don't show whether he ever got any of these yeah. people to be like, oh shit, to like give him money. Because why yeah. would you? Imagine you're like, I didn't kill anybody. Why would you give somebody
he's
money?
He's back at his place. Why isn't this working? It'll work this time.
This time it'll work. I know. And that's what cracks me up about this guy. It's like, obviously it's horrible. He's a horrible, horrible person.
Yeah, dumb.
But stupid.
Yeah, real dumb.
Like, I mean, if you're going to, and I'm not advocating
this. Unless it was
this,
some kind of a fetish.
Maybe it was. Maybe. I mean, I'm not advocating becoming a serial yeah, yeah. killer or anybody. I'm not saying that. But it's yeah. like, if you're going to kill people for profit, yeah. I mean, at least think it through a little bit.
No,
and if it doesn't yeah, work the first time and you yeah. didn't get caught, don't do it like that again.
Yeah, weird.
That didn't work.
Mm-mm.
Another stupid thing he did was,
He was fantasy prone.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, he's living in a world of fantasy.
So this Cream met up with this policeman that he kind of knew, mm-hmm. who was from New York City. And Cream was showing the policeman around Lambeth. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, want me to show you all the locations of the Lambeth poisoner's victim?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
And the policeman thought this was suspicious. And he also referred to Matilda Clover, one of the women that he had murdered. Mm-hmm. He referred to it as the murder of Matilda Clover, even though at the time they didn't know she'd been murdered. They thought she was, it was just an alcoholic's death. Yeah. So he called it a murder and the policeman was like, So he went to Scotland Yard and go, what the fuck? Can I pick this guy
up? Was that a murder? Yeah. Was it? Well, there's a guy here that claims that it is.
Yeah. He's like, and he showed me where all the victims were and he seemed to know a lot about it.
Right.
All right, so Scotland Yard were like, okay. So they put him under surveillance. They put him under surveillance and they saw him just toddling around to prostitutes all day long. They also contacted the police in Chicago. Mm-hmm. He said, oh yeah, that dude was in prison for poisoning people.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be and he probably should have still been in there. Sorry about that. So we sent him over there to like kill your people now. So now he's your problem. So, but finally, after finding this out, Scotland Yard finally arrested him in 1892. And he was actually arrested for Matilda Clover's murder because he had pretty much said, I murdered her because they didn't know it was a murder at the time. And then later, he was charged with four other murders, Nellie Donworth, Alice Marsh, and Emma Shrivel. And also, an attempted murder. So I guess one of the prostitutes, they saw him, he picked up one of the prostitutes and he tried to give her something to drink or trying to give her some pills or something like that. And she got suspicious and she threw him in the river.
She threw him in the river?
No, she threw the pills in the river.
Oh, okay.
She threw the pills in the river because she was just like, she thought he was sketchy, I guess.
Right, yeah.
So, but he was charged with the attempted murder there and he was also charged with extortion.
Huh.
Albeit the stupidest extortion in the history of extortion. And his defense was that...
This better be good.
It's not, I assure you. His defense was, I'm not that same guy. I'm only Dr. Thomas Neal. I'm not Dr. Thomas Neal Cream.
Okay.
And so he's trying to say, that's not
There's another guy.
There's another guy.
Right. With a name almost like mine.
Yeah. And that was... And it's funny because the newspapers at the time did refer to him as Dr. Thomas Neal, but that's not his name. That was his middle name. So,
That's a good way to get out from underneath the whole thing, though. Misidentification. Yeah. Not me.
Yeah.
Not me.
Well, I mean, really, that's probably all he could have done at this point.
Right.
And he wasn't smart enough to figure out anything else any good, obviously.
Yeah.
So, so he tried that and, they saw through that in about 5 seconds. His trial only lasted 3 days.
Okay.
The jury deliberated a grand total of 12 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Dead to rights.
Yeah. And they're like, pretty much, nope. Sorry about that. And yeah, so they sentenced him.
Feet went swinging.
Yeah. So they sentenced him to hang.
Yeah.
And so it was less than a month later after his conviction. And then they hanged him at Newgate Prison. And then there was the whole story about I am Jack the Ripper on the gallows.
Oh, yeah.
But like I said, the hangman. There's only the hangman's word for that.
That guy wasn't smart enough to be the river.
No. And
he was just begging for his life. He was trying to delay the execution. That's all that was. Hearing the story now, then
actually is what it sounds like. Maybe he thought, oh, if I say that,
They'll delay it.
Yeah. So he was trying to, retard. Yeah. So this guy... In a way, he's a serial killer in the sense that he killed at least 5 people, probably more. There was a lot. I mean, they think he might have killed his wife, too, but he never got pinned for that because natural causes. But you know how that goes around him. And the weird thing about him, he seems a little different than George Chapman because, like we said, George Chapman didn't really seem to have any particular motive. He didn't get any financial gain out of anything or anything like
something emotional.
Yeah. So I would think, I mean, of the two, putting aside the fact that Dr. Thomas Neal Cream, they thought he might have been in prison in Chicago at the time of the Ripper murders, which of course would have made it impossible for him to be the Ripper. He was actually considered as a suspect.
Hmm.
But like you said, it doesn't seem to fit. He doesn't seem like, I mean, not saying that Jack the Ripper was some fucking genius or anything like that. I mean, he must have been kind of cunning at least, because he never got caught. He
never got caught, right.
Even though he killed people in the middle of the street.
I would say that the Ripper was streetwise.
Yeah.
And Dr. Cream wasn't. He didn't know human nature too well.
No. Mm. And he was not, and I should say too that he, I mean, he wasn't a native of London. Neither was George Chapman. He was Polish, but he did live in that same area, so he was probably familiar with it. But, you know, Dr. Cream had kind of lived all over. He lived in Scotland, he lived in Canada, he lived in the U.S., and then he moved to London as an adult. But it seemed like he did get some thrill out of poisoning the women, because some of them he just poisoned prostitutes just for the fuck of it.
Yeah.
But in most cases, it seemed like he at least tried to get some kind of financial gain out of it.
I think he was fantasizing that he was some kind of a brilliant criminal mastermind, but right. was too dumb to realize that he wasn't. In the case of the Ripper, to be the Ripper, you'd have to be real comfortable in Whitechapel. You'd have to know it real well, and I guarantee you, he was a regular. Those women that he knew, he'd probably done business with them before.
Because maybe they wouldn't have felt threatened then. They would have just gone with them.
Yeah.
And actually, even at the time, like I know in the subsequent years, like pretty much everybody has been accused of being there. I'm surprised I haven't been accused of being Jack the Ripper, even though I wasn't even alive. I had a time machine. I went back. I'd killed some prostitutes. But you know what I mean? Everybody was accused. But even back then, they said, whoever is doing this has intimate knowledge of Whitechapel. They are from here.
I'm going to up it. I'm going to say the reason why he got away with it, the Ripper, he got away with it because he was known and well-liked.
Yeah. I mean,
it wouldn't surprise me. Those girls trusted him.
Yeah.
That's
because maybe he was banging prostitutes all the time and not killing them.
And not killing them.
And then just every now and then he's just like, oh, seems like one of those days.
You go on a murder spree. I bet you.
Yeah.
I bet you.
And maybe he wasn't a weirdo. I mean, maybe he was pretty normal most of the time.
Yeah. Well, somebody that they knew and liked, I think.
Yeah.
That's how you would get away with that.
Yeah.
No suspicion.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, even though... like I said,
I'm just saying that off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But, I would think that they knew him and liked him.
Yeah. Now, I mean, Dr. Cream was a prostitute guy, went to prostitutes. When they had him under surveillance, they said he was fucking toddling around to prostitutes all the time.
It's Victorian era, you know?
Yeah, true.
They didn't date back then. They were either married or they were going out with hookers.
Yeah.
And that was another thing. Yeah. And another thing that was weird is that these serial killers were killing women that they were marrying. Because in those days, you know, women were desperate to marry. They couldn't work.
Yeah.
So they didn't have to be a prowling, hunting type serial killer all the time like you'd have nowadays.
Yeah.
You could just marry some chick.
Yeah.
And kill her. And yeah. And move on, marry another one and kill her.
And honestly, like I said...
it would have been a serial killer's paradise.
Well, it was in many ways. Sure. And in a lot of ways, it was kind of... it was really bad. Particularly in those parts of London and stuff like that, because they couldn't catch you.
No forensic technology.
Right, exactly.
No forensic science.
I mean, that's what I mean. If circumstances hadn't intervened, some of these guys might not have been caught.
Especially no paperwork.
Especially if they were poisoners, because they didn't have any, you know, you could, like you said, a guy could just marry a woman.
Yeah.
He could slowly poison her. It would seem like she died of consumption or died of fucking... so people were dying of shit back then all the time.
There was no paperwork, no real... bureaucracy that meant anything. No DNA.
Yeah.
Fingerprinting was new. That was very much in the late 1800s. Yeah. No criminal databases. No communication between one county and the next. One state and the next. No federal database.
Yeah.
So all you had to do was commit a crime and move. And then forge some documents.
Yeah.
Or buy forged documents.
And it happened over and over.
And you could change your identity on a yearly basis. So
look at this Dr. Cream idiot.
Yeah.
He was in prison. Yeah. For murder in Chicago. They let him out early. He moved to London. No one knows anything.
During that same time, you know, people don't realize that the Wild West was going on at that time,
that too.
And out in the West, you'd have guys who would be robbing trains 1 month. Year later, they're the sheriff in a town somewhere.
Yes, morality was much more fluid back then.
Yeah, they played both sides. They played both sides of the law back then.
Yeah, that's true. You know?
And he might be a good sheriff. That'd be the weird thing.
Yeah.
You know,
that's some of the skills as a train robber would come in handy
to catch criminals.
Of course.
Well, I'm going to do this now for a living.
Well, yeah. It was just a little you're using your expertise.
Right, yeah.
it's almost kind of like how they use serial killers that are in prison to catch other serial killers. Because right. who knows better how to think like a criminal than another criminal?
I don't think they do that anymore.
Probably not.
I think they have profilers now that can do all that. They just go interview them. Well, I guess that's kind of like helping them. But
they go interview. That's how they come up with profiles is from interviewing them because they have a database of all of them.
I think they know all the MOs and the certain psychologies behind these serial killers for the most part now, though. I think they've identified the different types of them.
Yeah. Interestingly, we actually, since when we were doing research for the show, we actually come across this little documentary. I don't know what year it was from. It wasn't that old. But it was a guy who was speculating that it was a guy named Frederick Deeming, right? Who was an Australian serial killer. I think he was originally from Britain, but then he moved to Australia later. And he hacked up his wife and four kids. And they think that he might have been the Ripper because his movements were very similar, too.
Oh, yeah, I remember
like that. He was in the UK when the murders were going on, and then they stopped when he left, and blah, blah, blah. And remember, they said, oh, they were trying to get DNA off the stamp from one of the Jack the Ripper letters. And then they found out it was a woman's DNA, didn't they? Which seemed kind of weird.
Well, it made sense, though, because they thought that the women at the post office probably licked the stamp for you.
Yeah. Yeah, which could have been. That would have explained that. Right. And, you know, she could have been Deeming. I had never really heard him put forward seriously until I saw this, and I don't know if that guy was just a crackpot or not, but it was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But like I said, you know, it was so long ago, and the only reason we're fascinated with it now, well, aside from the brutality, is because they never caught the guy. And there were so many suspects, and so many people it could have been.
Yeah, there's a lot of serial killers they never caught, though. You just don't hear much about them. Never caught the original Night Stalker.
I was going to say, they never caught that, dude.
They've torn up houses that had dead bodies underneath them. It happened sometime during the 20s or the 30s, you know?
And it's like, holy shit, we didn't even know about any of this.
Yeah, didn't even know about it.
That's really scary to think about.
Yeah.
That there's probably like all kind of murders that happened that nobody ever... Right. I mean, because if no one ever reported you missing...
Right. Back in those days,
if somebody murdered you, you would just
disappear.
Yeah, you just languish under some.
Especially if you didn't have any family that was looking for you, and then your family could go looking for you, but they couldn't find anything because one state didn't, states and counties really didn't.
And the thing about serial killers too is that the reason that it's so hard to catch them is because they kill random people.
Yeah, no connection.
I mean, you know, and that's another thing. I don't advocate this, you guys, but like, you know, if you're going to commit a murder some fucker you don't know. Because if you murder somebody you do know, they'll catch you immediately. Yeah. Because it's almost always somebody the person knows.
Yeah.
Stranger murder, very rare.
Probably about time, huh?
Yeah, we're coming up to the end of the show. Hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and go like us on Facebook. Or follow us on Twitter. We're at 13 o'clock podcast. And is there anything else I usually say at the end? I can't remember now.
Nope.
Don't become serial killers, you guys. And if you do, don't get caught. And we'll see you next week. Bye.